thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I'll do my best.
Well, that's ambitious.
Here's John Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is ambitious. It's 12:11, and happy holiday to you. This is John Williams.
Lord have mercy.
And for Steve Bertrand, the markets are closed, and rather than doing a business hour, they said, hey, John, why don't you do an extra hour of what you do? And I said, okay, that's a good idea. What is that? Let's find out. I know what you're probably thinking. John, what are you wearing? Today, as we alluded to a moment ago, I'm wearing red, white, and blue USA flag Chuck Taylor high-top canvas Converse. I've got my Chuck E. T's on, the American flag version. They are my favorite shoes. I'm not wearing any socks today. We've been moving, and my socks, like my underwear, I've discovered, are either in a place I can't get to or a place I don't know. So, USA flag Converse, no socks.
How does that work with the Converse on the inside? You get some sweatage going on in there? Or?
Oh, you should see what's happening with the missing underwear.
All of a sudden, we've gone into TMI territory here. Too much information.
Well, in fact, if we do want to move north, and I'm not sure we do, from the ankles to my knees, I am featuring amber waves of thin leg hair, a few freckles, and a few purple dots, little tiny mountains of majesty I've acquired while bumping into things that weren't there before because, as I said a moment ago, we've been moving. Past those little bruises, I've got some navy blue shorts on, covering the fruited plains, as it were. And then from the waist up, it's all America, America. I've got white stars bursting in air, or a blue short sleeve shirt that we bought at Macy's, which features in its ads a sort of patriotic red star on white. So I've got the sort of white star, blue background shirt on top. And then underneath that shirt, I have a reddish shirt with white lettering that reads Southern Illinois. Technically, it's the Saluki maroon from my alma mater, but it's red, white, and blue enough for me. And so everything I can do to be patriotic today, at least in my attire, I am. So happy Independence Day from the John Williams Show, from me, John Williams, in all of my clothes. May God shed his grace on thee and crown your good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. Now onto our top story, the Nathan's annual hot dog eating competition. There are some things that I cannot quite put my finger on, that I cannot explain why I don't like. But I do not like the hot dog eating contest. And it may be because Sports Illustrated covers it. Pardon me, ESPN. That it's broadcast live as a sporting event on ESPN. I know America's hot dogs. I get it. But really? ESPN, a hot dog eating event? It's so preposterous. And the announcers take it so sort of seriously. And you're either on the bus or you're not. But there's also something about excessive consumption of food in America that I've never always enjoyed. For instance, when they say they're cooking the world's biggest pizza, it'll be the size of the Grant Park, and 7,500 people are going to sit there and try and eat the pizza and break the world record. I've never been on board those things. I don't know if it's because half the world is starving and we're playing with ours or what it is, but I've just never gotten on board the Nathan's hot dog eating competition. But who won? Did you say Joey Chestnut?
Joey Chestnut, of course, for his 10th time. The pot, I'm looking at what the cash prizes are right now. Total prize money, $40,000, with $20,000 going to male winners, $20,000 going to female. You finish in first place, you get $10,000. Joey's walking away with a cool $10,000 for stuffing 72 hot dogs in his face in that 10-minute span.
Don't you think at some point his small intestines are like, really? Really? Do we have to do this again? Are you serious?
They're freaks of nature, let me tell you.
Intestines or these hot dog eaters?
Just everything. Everything about this. Yeah. But we did have a local guy. I believe Pete had him on yesterday, Juan Rodriguez from Crestwood. He's actually a fitness trainer who got essentially into the situation by being dared by his brother. And then he started the competitive eating circuit. He actually competed in Naperville at the Ribs Fest last weekend, put down 30. And he said he looked up, and I believe it was his sister or some family members told him he could wind it down because there really wasn't anyone else to compete with there. So
everybody left the table in shock and awe.
You can tone it down, but he knew his 30 wasn't going to be anywhere near what Joey Chestnut could do.
The other thing that, I'm just, pardon me while I figure this out loud, but Every time I eat a hot dog, I love it. Like, my favorite food on the grill, and we'll be getting to this in just a minute, is a bratwurst. Just a good old-fashioned Johnsonville brat. You got a favorite local meat guy? That's great. Go get his or hers. But for me, the Johnsonville stuff, I found myself whimpering at the Whole Foods the other day, longingly looking at a display case of them next to mustard and buns. I almost wanted to protest. This isn't even fair. How can I not buy these brats? I love me some brats. Even ordinary hot dogs. You go to a ball game, I don't think you can keep me from ordering a hot dog. That's just the way it goes. But whenever I do, I know I was bad. You should not be eating hot dogs. They've got cockroaches in there, you know, just as a staple, just filler. There's all sorts of things in there. Even the good stuff, the meat parts, are the worst meat parts. There's nothing redeeming about a hot dog, so you know you should not be eating them, but they've made them delicious, and so you do. So then I think, okay, well, I ate one or two of them, and then I won't eat them again until I get tickets to another Cubs game. So I'm, you know, not going to eat a lot of them. I'll survive this. But if you wanted to kill me, you could say, hey, John, why don't you eat 70 of those right now? I mean, don't you think, how does your body not go into some sort of shock?
And dunk them in water before you do it.
Oh, well, that's it. That's it, too. Most of us, it's like, this is why it doesn't even make any sense, because I've just described what's so wonderful about a hot dog. Everything, the taste, the flavor, the texture, the heat, the accoutrement, the Chicago-ness of it. It's perfect. And then you ruin it by dunking it in water so that you can just get more of them in your gullet. That's not a good idea. That's like the worst case scenario. The best case scenario is you keep eating them leisurely on a sunny day watching the game, gingerly chewing them and squishing them down with old style. And over the course of 4 hours, you have 12 of them. But you don't have 70 of them in 10 minutes. That's obscene. And the only way to accomplish that is to dunk them in water.
Do you have a food where you don't even think about it and all of a sudden you're a box deep? Or
Oh, yeah, gosh.
I got Cheez-Its. Cheez-Its with me. All of a sudden it's like, where did they all go?
Well, if you had some of those Ruffle barbecue potato chips.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just barbecue potato chips in general. I would say, if you just said, what's your weakness? Like, if they said, hey, you're going to die Thursday, I would start eating barbecue potato chips until I died. Just constantly have barbecue in my mouth would be kind of that orangish reddish stain.
Your fingers would be stained,
yes,
too. Yeah.
They go, hey, John, are you going to die soon? Because it looks like you've done nothing but eat barbecue potato chips. I go, yeah, I am. And yes, it's good. And yes, it's almost worth it. It's not, but I mean, wow, what a way to go. Swedish fish, too. If you put a jar of Swedish fish in front of me, I pretty much will eat all of them.
You gotta, that thing works your teeth, though, because you gotta work your tongue around your teeth to get that stuff out of there. Right?
I'm the Joey Chestnut of Swedish fish. I've acquired skills that most people don't have.
That's going to be on a different holiday. We'll have that competition.
I don't know when that is. Sweden Day?
Yeah, that would probably be a good one.
I'm pretty proud of this radio station right now. I've been listening to it a lot lately because we're moving, and I don't have cable hooked up. I don't even have Wi-Fi or the internet in my home. It's like we're living in the Brady Bunch's house without TV. And so we're doing things like, I swear to God, when's the last time you did this / have you ever done this? Last night, my wife and I, devoid of usable electronics, save our cell phones, we're playing solitaire on separate tables, each of us looking at the other going, huh, you got a two-up. That's what we did last
night. Real solitaire, physical card solitaire.
Right.
You're not talking about tabletop or laptop or desktop solitaire.
Exactly. Okay. That's a good point. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the game, once upon a time, people played them with laminated pieces of paper. They're called cards. And the same things you see digitally displayed on your device, you can actually hold in your hand and turn them over with, they're called fingers. And that's how you play solitaire. We were doing that last night. Of course, we didn't have any usable tables, so we played them on boxes that say Allied Van Lines on either side. And that's how we live. Listen, don't you worry about me. I'll be fine. So we're listening to the radio a lot, too, because I did find a radio, which, if you don't know what that is, it's a thing that, oh, never mind. So we've been listening to the radio a lot, and I've just been hearing some conversations on this radio station that make me feel good about America and good about WGN. Dean Richards' show on Sunday is one people are still talking about. I don't know if you heard that conversation. My son came over today, and he kind of looked around and went, huh, so you're living like this. And then we said no Wi-Fi, and happily he stayed. And then we found ourselves all discussing Dean's show on Sunday because Griffin was listening to a radio too. And Dean had on both sides of the conversation about Hedy Weiss and the, what I say is blackballing her to the degree that you can, the muting of her, the attempted muting of Hedy Weiss, the Sun-Times theater critic, by the Chicago theater community. A couple of points about that, and a point or two about this when we come back. I want you to text to 312-981-7200 if you're lucky enough to have cable and Wi-Fi. Ooh. And tell me, what is your thing that is your favorite barbecue thing? We'll pepper, if you will, the next 2.5 hours with your suggestions, your, I don't know, favorites. It could be a broth. You know what it is for me? Like, I've got about four. I'll give you one. Marinated flank steak. Oh, my gosh. Inexpensive. Easy to do. You have to get married so that your wife will marinate it. But once you get that done, she marinates it overnight. And then the next day, you put it on the grill. And I don't know how you can be happier. Really, that is the best, easiest food in the world. And you can serve it with just about anything. You don't have to serve it with nothing. Marinated flank steak. Okay, text me your... Oh, I just love it on the 4th. We're cooking this. What is it? 312-981-7200. I'm John Williams. It's 1222. This is WGN. Marinated flank steak for me. I see a lot of texts coming in for your favorite foods. John, a good brat for sure. John, please share what's your wife's. I knew this was going to come up. Marinade for the flank steak, for the skirt steak. Brenda, I think you're listening. You're going to have to text it to me because I don't know. Here's how I marinated. I go, hey, Brenda, what do we have? And she says, we're having that flank steak you like. I said, oh, are you marinating it? She says, yes. And then I noticed there are some halved lemons and some little jars with dark liquid. And she's apparently mixed those in some combination. I hope this is helpful to you. And then it goes into the refrigerator for a while. That's all I know. Now, Brenda will text it to me, and I'll repeat it. You know what I like to do, too, is a beer can chicken. My son's considering himself a bit of the backyard barbecuer, and I said, well, what do you do? And he was running down some of his greatest hits. I said, have you done the beer can chicken? Because that's really what it is. You get a can of beer, you open it up, you have a couple sips, and then you nestle the chicken on top of that thing. Humiliating for the chicken, but it's a chicken. And then you just stand that bad boy up on the grill, and then you go away and come back, and that is really spectacular.
How do you do with the dismount on that? Because I struggle to get it off of the apparatus.
Yeah.
And if you spill that beer, that's hot beer.
It sure is, my friend. Don't have an easy answer for you on that. Generally get some of those gloves that you use to move the grill parts around, which are kind of stained and dirty, and if no one's watching, I just lift it right off. And I've got the mitts on so I can tolerate the heat. Otherwise, it is a little delicate operation now that you mention it.
Yeah,
there,
lost,
Mr.
Lost a little bit of knuckle hair on that.
Sorry to hear that. So stay tuned for the marinated flank steak recipe from Brenda, who may or may not be texting it. And then here's another thing that I like to do. Cheesy potatoes, which I'm sure everybody in America knows how to do by now. If you don't, it's cheese and potatoes, hence the name cheesy potatoes. You make a maybe 3-layer bed of aluminum foil, and then into there you just chop some red potatoes or fingerling potatoes or bacon potatoes, and then you put much more cheese than you think you need. Just get some cheddar, maybe sharp cheddar cheese, and then cut some onions, a bunch of onions, more onions than you think you need, and then go to the store and buy even more butter and cut that into about tablespoon squares, and then put some salt and pepper on that. Cheese, butter, onions, potatoes, salt and pepper. And then wrap that bed up into a cylinder, into a tube. Just fold it in on its ends so that everything is contained, because that's going to turn into sort of a hot, bubbling, cheesy, buttery molasses. And it's going to cook them taters. You take those off in about 45 minutes, and they'll hold the parade for you next year. That's a good food. And it's so that's it. I know you know that, but boy, that you bring that up to barbecue, and I'll show up along with the marinated flank steak, which we're still waiting for the recipe on, or some brats. Okay, so your favorite, your best things on the grill, I'll read through those after the news. Also, we asked Harry Tynowitz to jump on. We're halfway through the baseball season. Halfway through the season, and I don't think the North or South sides are especially happy with the way things are going. What's the prognosis, Harry, and what's happened so far? That's still to come on WGN. Watch Navy Pier's Independence Day display live as fireworks light up Chicago's lakefront. Chicago's Summer Blast, a WGN TV special tonight at 9:30. I've called the city of Chicago and asked them if they could postpone it this year, as my dizzy, dappled dachshund Daisy is a little nervous these days, and it would be nice if we just skipped, if we could just skip 1 year. Would it kill anybody, really? So that's tonight at 9:30. Thank you, sir. 12:35. Maybe the best version of all. Best version of our national anthem is... Actually, Lady Gaga at the Super Bowl was pretty awesome. At 12:36, this is John Williams. In for Steve Bertrand. The markets and Steve are taking the business day off. Steve will be back tomorrow, and I will continue through 3 o'clock. I'll do my normal shift from 1 to 3 today and through the rest of the week as well. Happy to be with you on the 4th of July. We're downtown in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Very quickly, among the items that you folks are really enjoying in the backyard, John says, let's just go to, we add bacon to those cheesy potato packets on the grill. Oh, that's so good. Happy 4th of July, John. We're having delicious burgers for dinner. It's a favorite here. My simple marinade is soy sauce. It's amazing what that will do to liven up boneless, skinless chicken thighs or flank steak. Yum, yum, says Joyce. Homemade potato salad, John, and a charred grilled hot dog with the works. This one says, John, I'm Mexican-American, and we got to have our skirt steak on the grill.
Oh,
it's
that's good.
So good. And then I love how it's like, what do you put on the side? I was thinking cheesy potatoes, but this texter writes, we make salsa, guacamole, and a salad and rice to go with it. You can't go wrong. John, grilled chicken sandwiches with garlic scapes. I'm not sure what scapes are, if that's a place or a typo or a food. Garlic scapes, a little garlic anyway. John, mussels served with drawn butter and lemon sauce off the grill. A good brat, John. That's simple. That works for us. Hey, John, please share your wife's marinade for skirt steak. I will as soon as she texts it to me. And John, we love barbecue chicken. Doesn't barbecue chicken sound good right now? Brats. Egg macaroni salad, thank you, and my flag cake for dessert. A perfect fourth, says Christine.
No, no fish entries. Well, the mussels were in there. I did salmon yesterday on the grill. That was on the cedar plank that you soak in water.
Yeah.
That's solid right there.
I've done that before. My problem is I never think far enough ahead to soak the cedar plank, so I tend to go through them like cordwood. You know, cedar plank burnt,
sure.
Cedar plank burnt. One of these days, I'm going to soak it for a day and then forget and cook brats and never use the thing. I don't know if I'll ever manage to remember to soak the cedar plank a day ahead of time and then cook salmon. But when that day happens, you'll be the first to know. Harry Tynowitz is on the phone from The Beat, the sports guy here on WGN Radio. Hi, Harry. How are you?
Well, now I'm drooling. Everything sounded great.
Doesn't that? Doesn't that?
Oh, man, I want some skirt steak. I want you to plank some salmon for me. I'm a big potato salad guy. I'll just have like a, you know, I'll do a potato salad IV all day on the 4th.
A potato salad IV.
Right. It just saves time. And then, of course, my specialty is the Smirnoff and cheddar omelet. Try grilling that.
Hold on a second. Now you got to figure out what that even is. Smirnoff vodka?
And Smirnoff and cheddar omelet.
Hoobly Wuddly. So you get it to, you make an omelet with some cheddar cheese in there. What do you do with the Smirnoffs?
It's included in the omelet. Not everybody, you know, not for kids, not for me anymore, but that's just a tasty treat when it's cooked together.
Well, I suppose the alcohol burns off, but it adds some sort of flavoring to it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Like most, like, you know, chicken Vesuvio, you can't get drunk from it, but there's a great Vesuvio taste, or Vio Marcella.
Sure.
Same principle.
But so then you cook, you pour the vodka into the whipped eggs, for instance?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, sir.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Oh, well, stick around. I'll scare you.
Wow. Talk to me a little bit about the baseball season in Chicago. We're at the halfway point. Cubs are back in town. Are you surprised and or are you disappointed?
I'm frustrated. I'm not disappointed because last year was unbelievable. You know, they came out of the gate like Secretariat at, you know, at the Belmont, and they were just so spectacular right away. I didn't think they would have a record like that, but I also didn't think, John, that we'd be halfway through the season and you know, be at 500. But there's a lot of positives. You know, we're getting injured guys back. They've been playing very well at Wrigley, and the Brewers don't really keep me up tonight. I'm not intimidated by Milwaukee.
Yeah, we're in the right division this year, aren't we?
Yes, yes, we are.
I mean, how would you like to be out west? Because We aren't even, you know, if we don't win our division, this sounds silly to say, but there it is. We're 2.5 games out right now. If we don't win our division's not sending the wild card team.
Right, right, right. So we did pick the right division this year, and it's, you know, if you just look at the loss column, it's only one game, but we have a whole half season to play. We have 10 games head on with Brew Crew, including Thursday. Thursday is a makeup game. You know, you would think only, like, you know, couples arguing would need a makeup game, but the Brewers and Cubs need one. So they'll play on Thursday. And yeah, I just think, like, you know, the pitching isn't going to stay that bad. And I think that they're going to make a trade here soon. So I think the Cubs are going to, you know, come through for us.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering that myself when I was listening to you and Mark talk a little bit about this the other day. And I'm wondering if everything fell into place last year. That is, these players aren't that good. They all just had great seasons that year. And we've more reverted to the norm this year. Because everybody says, well, this is the best team in baseball. There's too much talent on the field. Well, maybe they overachieved last year. Maybe everybody, you know, I mean, Lordy, look at Schwarber, for instance, but the whole lot of them. Every single pitcher was a one or two for another team. So maybe we got spoiled last year, and this is a better sort of representation of who we are.
Well, I think we're better. I think we're a lot better than 500. And, you know, I think what the nature of baseball is, in a long season, everybody slumps. The great, you know, I mean, Stan Musial slumped, right? George Brett slumped. The, you know, the greatest hitters of all time would slump. What's happening with the Cubs is, like, everybody's slumping at once.
Out of the gate, too. I mean, nobody's got – who's had a good run at the plate? Jay or, I don't know, or maybe – I'm trying to think of who – Chris Bryant's been doing okay, but has anybody at the plate for the Cubs this year had a spell where you thought, boy, they're back, or that's what, the way they were last year?
Well, you know, Hayward has been one guy that actually improved. Remember, Hayward was just awful last year,
yeah,
you know, at the plate. So Hayward's gotten better at the plate. But and Rizzo's starting to get the power numbers up there. But I think, you know, and Wilson Contreras, he's one of those guys, like, the more he plays, the more you just love him. I mean, the Cubs have guys, you know, that you can fall in love with. Javi Baez, I know he's got a bad discipline at the plate, but I think the Cubs, you know, they're that good. You know, I mean, if you're going like Cubs and Brewers, you know, which guy do you want on your team?
Oh, yeah.
Which first baseman, which second baseman? You're going to end up with mostly Cubs. So, I mean, the problem has been, for me, the problem has been they uncharacteristically have been, you know, very poor on the hill from the starters. And John Lackey has given up more home runs than he gave up all last year. Jake has not been Jake. The Jake we saw Sunday in Cincinnati was spectacular. I'd like to wonder more of that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right. And Kyle Hendricks, you know, hopefully he'll come back from his injury. But, I mean, right now, which pitchers do you have confidence in? Lester and maybe Montgomery. And, you know, those are the only starters you have confidence in.
How many players are we going to have on the All-Star team?
We're going to have one, possibly two, if you rock the vote.
How many did we have last year?
We had seven. What's your point?
you know, really, I'm not a hater, and I'm in fact looking past the division. But here again, I'll echo something Mark said to you the other day, and that is the novelty of being a playoff team is now worn off on us this year. That's not going to be good enough. So I want us to go to the World Series again.
I want us to go to the World Series, as do Theo and Jed. And remember, Theo is, you know, he's King Arthur. He pulled the sword from the stone. Other guys came close, you know, but he's the guy that did it. I really think, John, they're going to make at least one, maybe two major trades for starting pitchers. And when they do that, you're going to have to give up, you know, a lot of talent. Kyle Schwarber, I believe, could go. You know, you're looking at an American League team that Schwarber's more important for because he can DH. I think that this guy they sent down today, Jamer Candelario, is a terrific young player, but he plays first and third. Well, the Cubs have a couple of pretty good guys playing first and third.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe if you move Candelario and Schwarber, or, you know, God forbid, if you had to, like, Ian Happ just homered a couple times. You might have to move Ian Happ in a trade, but the Cubs have to have starting pitching. There's a few guys out there that they could get. The rumor, the newest rumor is Justin Verlander from the Tigers.
Wow.
You know, which would be great because then we get Cade Upton in the stands once every 5 years.
Hadn't thought about it that way. By the way, just talk about Schwarber for a second. How's he doing in Iowa, do you know?
He's doing okay, yeah. I mean, he's got three homers, and he had a bad night last night, but he's got three homers. And, you know, when they sent Montero away, you know, a lot of people thought, oh, here comes Schwarber. But the Cubs really want him to find his stroke. The Cubs don't win, you know this, the Cubs don't win the World Series last year if Schwarber doesn't come back like that. So Schwarber's going to be down there for a while, and he's going to find his stroke. And they're talking about trading for a veteran catcher like Alex Avila. You know, his name has come up. He was on the Sox last year, but he's with the Tigers now. His father is the GM of the Tigers. Imagine trading your son.
Hey, listen, if you're in the show, it doesn't matter.
That's right.
At least that's my attitude. It's 12:46. Harry Tynowitz is on the phone. Let me take a quick break. Do you have another minute, Harry?
For you, yeah.
I mean, I kind of get the feeling we called you just a little while ago, and you're probably ready to put something on the grill. I bet you're wearing flip-flops right now.
I've got like a lovely little I'm wearing some wedgies, and it's very comfortable.
Yeah. Well, just talk to me about the South Side and the All-Star Game and the front page story in the Chicago Tribune today by Phil Rosenthal. I happen to agree with him, and I hope you do too. What a fun story, and I'm glad somebody is saying it. I'm glad we're talking about this. It's 12:50, an important announcement. This text is just poured in. My wife has sent me our marinated skirt steak recipe, which has the sort of detail in here that makes me worry that she spent some time looking for it. Brenda, thank you for that. I hope you didn't go out of your way, because I was just going to wing it, some lemon and some soy. But here are the details in just a minute. Harry Tynowitz is talking to us right now from The Beat about first the Northsiders, now the Southsiders, and some All-Star and Unifor talk in between. So,
by the way, that is the definition of a tease. I'm not going anywhere until I hear that recipe.
I'm telling you, you start with 1.5 pounds of flank steak. Everybody write that down, 1.5 pounds of flank steak, and then the juice of one whole lemon. I'll pick it up from here in a minute, but you're going to thank me when you do this. So just finish up on the Cubs real quick. They will make the playoffs. You think they're going to improve enough that they will be legitimate contenders to win the pennant, right?
Yeah, yes, I do. I think that the bats will get going, and I see one major trade for a starting pitcher coming, and it'll be a starter that stays here for a while. It'll be a team friendly, it'll be a contract that goes like 3 years, and Quintana from the Sox is one of the guys that could come here.
Yeah, well, that'd be kind of interesting. Let's talk about the Sox for a second. Are they about where you thought they would be on the 4th of July?
Yeah, I mean, I think what they're doing is brilliant, you know, and it makes it fun. You know, they came back against the Rangers the other night. They came back against the Yankees. They're fun to watch. And you know going in, you know, that it's not about this season. They are regrouping. The Chris Sale trade was brilliant. The Adam Eaton trade, you know, Rick Hahn might get arrested for that one. And now you have Washington. You know, Cubs fans saw the Cubs come back on the Nationals last week. And then last night, the Nationals had a 2-0 lead in the ninth with two outs, and their closer blew it again. So I feel like there is a huge need for David Robertson. And I know the Yankees want him back. I know the Nationals need him, and also Texas needs a closer. So I think Rick Hahn is not only going to be able to move Quintana and get a lot, but I think David Robertson, the White Sox closer, will bring back a lot. So his plan is very similar to Theo's plan and Jed's plan, and you're going to see the Sox. You know they signed that kid Robert, the young player who's supposed to be like the greatest center fielder alive, and they've got Yoan Moncada at second base. They've got Michael Kopech, who's been clocked at 110 or something crazy like that. The Sox are going to be very good, but it's going to be a while. It's like 2020. So, 2020, Trump will be gone and the White Sox will arrive.
It seems like all of my favorite teams, the teams that I care about that I watch more closely, are asking us to be patient. And it worked with the Cubs. They had a plan. They were patient. And whether you liked it or not, you had to be. And it paid off. The Minnesota Timberwolves, just to switch towns and sports, but they're sort of doing the same thing that, in a way, the Chicago Bulls have decided to do, too. Mm-hmm. Go young.
The Minnesota Timber Bulls?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that trade was near and dear to my heart because I have players on both teams that I like, and that they swapped them I thought was very, very interesting. But in each case, you go, okay, we know that we're not going to win it this year, but you can see what we're doing. We're going to, I was a fan of the Jimmy Butler trade. Were you?
Yes, I was, because, the Bulls were going in circles, and even though Butler's the best player by far in that trade, there might be a day when Adam Levine is the best player, in that trade. And the Bulls had to do something. I couldn't take another year of being just good enough to miss out on a lottery pick.
Yeah.
So, and then you saw that, I know you saw Taj Gibson also signed with the Timberwolves. So they're getting the band back together in Minneapolis, and God bless them. But in Chicago, that's all I'm worried about. And I think the Bulls will, this is going to be a very top-heavy draft. The first, five guys that come out of the draft this year will be excellent. So the Bulls are much better off getting 19 wins and hopefully getting one of those players than they are to get back in the playoffs and get eliminated in the first round again.
That's your estimation for next year, 19 wins?
I'm saying, hey, 19. Yes.
Wow, the over-under is 19 from Harry Tynowitz on the Bulls next season. I may take you up on that, but let's hold on that for now. Front page of the Tribune today, Phil Rosenthal has the story. 10 different uniforms the Cubs have worn this season. They've got a picture in there of who's the unfortunate soul who's wearing the pink socks for Mother's Day for the White Sox.
Let me go grab my trib. I stepped into my studio.
You have the Independence Day uniform, the Memorial Day uniform, the Negro Leagues Heritage Game, Father's Day, Mother's Day. I don't know what baseball is doing.
Derek Holland, left-handed starting Derek Holland.
It's a great cause. Nobody's against mothers, and everybody's for breast cancer research. But why do we have to make baseball players flags for all of these causes? I don't understand it.
I'm a uniform geek, and what should be my wife's walk-in closet is my uniform walk-in closet.
Really?
Geeky. I should have thought of Mitchell and Ness 40 years ago, but I didn't. I've got about 100 different uniforms and jerseys. Not so many basketball, because, basketball jerseys and out-of-shape Jews don't really mesh. So I've got hockey, football, and baseball. Yeah, I've got a ton of them. And I love uniforms. And, I'll watch teams like the San Diego Chargers, sorry, the L.A. Chargers. They should always wear their powder blues. There are certain teams, the Atlanta Braves, I wish they'd go back to the Henry Nieren era, blue with the feathers of the sleeve. There are certain, the Astros rainbow, what a great look that was. I love uniforms, but this is crazy that, because not only the uniforms, John, but the hats. I'm on the phone with my dad yesterday, and he's going, well, which team is in the field? Because they're all wearing the exact same hat.
Well, is it marketing, though? I mean, besides shining MLB's light on various issues and causes and days, is it just people like you are going to buy more throwback jerseys or souvenir hats?
Right. Yes, yes. I get emails all the time that, hey, look what the Cubs are going to wear on the 4th of July. Look what the Cubs are going to wear on, and again, like you said, Mother's Day, pink. You know, the NFL does that. That's great. You know, Father's Day, blue. You know, it made people aware. You know, those are great causes. But, you know, the Sox are on 9 different jerseys. The Cubs are on 10 different jerseys. It's, you know, it's a little much. You know, I mean, I think I got, like, you know, 3 pair of jeans and, like, 3 suits. You know, why do they need, like, so many jerseys? It's, you know, just and the Dead are in town. Shouldn't they have a tie-dye jersey?
Yes, they that would have been fun. Now, that I would like to see. I saw blocks full of Grateful Dead fans walking around Wrigleyville late last week. And at first I forgot that the Grateful Dead was in town. And then I started to see these swarms of people. Talk about wearing uniforms with their tie-dye stuff. All ages.
Oh, but yeah, it's great. You know, there was actually one team, the New Jersey Nets, about 20 years ago. They wore tie-dye blue and white uniforms, I think, for 1 or 2 seasons. And that's just it, as far as I can remember.
Well, what's the if you said pick an era, pick a team, pick a sport, what's your all-time favorite uniform to imagine? Is it, you know, the Yankees classic pinstripes? Is it, I don't know, the Cubs, Sox? Or pick a different sport for that matter?
Well, I mean, I'm always gonna love the Blackhawks. I'm always gonna love
the best sweater.
This is one of the greatest questions ever, John. I'm always going to love the Blackhawks. I mean, it's just so cool, that proud Indian head, red, green, yellow, orange feathers. But, like, you know, the teams that aren't Chicago, I love all the Chicago teams. Bears have classic. Okay, the Los Angeles Kings purple. Do you remember those?
No.
Okay, I've got their.
Why would I remember that? But go ahead.
Well, they were purple with, like, yellow shoulders, and the road jerseys were yellow with purple sweaters. And when Gretzky went there, he said, we're not going to wear purple and gold, purple and yellow anymore.
Really?
And I said, okay. Yeah. So they switched them. But I've got a purple Bernie Nichols jersey, who spent time with the Hawks. And I've got a purple. You think I'm kidding?
This is you. By the way, Harry, this is still you answering favorite jerseys questions, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, all right.
Purple Los Angeles Kings,
right,
would be, you know, my favorite hockey, the powder blue Chargers. They should,
right,
always wear powder blue.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why they don't. And the baseball, there's so many teams that just go back, like, to the 70s and the 80s. And a lot of them do it now. You know, a lot of them have these throwback nights. But that's what I'd rather see, Jen. I'd rather see a team wear their old jerseys.
Yeah, I get that.
Then come back with, like, hey, we're doing Paisley this week. Don't forget, it's just platinum.
It's Phil Rosenthal's piece in the front page of the sports section of the Tribune today. And a little chatter here about the Cubs and Sox and what they're doing and how well they may yet fare. Harry, I'll listen to you on the weekend. It's always a pleasure to listen to you in any capacity. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure. You're too kind. I will join you next Saturday. And I'm glad that Chris Christie's smart enough to use Permaseal, because I would have guessed buttercream.
That's Harry Tynowitz. You hear him with Mark Carmen on weekends here on WGN. It's 107. This is John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. Happy Independence Day to you from all of us at WGN Radio and here on the John Williams Show. I was in for Steve Bertrand, if you will, in the last hour. Steve is back with me next week. Actually, tomorrow Steve will be back in the usual spot. And Ryan, it's nice to have you in the booth here as well.
Yeah, I'm getting out of here soon, so. Mm. Domati's coming.
Domati's coming back?
Yes.
Domati Pongo worked earlier. He's working a split shift. What is he, new here?
That was very exciting. You're very excited to have Domati coming back.
Well, I get to talk to Domati on Saturdays, and so I heard him on earlier and thought, oh, I'll be messing with Domati. That'll be fun. Then I heard you, and that's a fair trade. I love you both, but I'm just surprised that Domati's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be because Domati's been working here for about 6 minutes. And everybody else has been here for about 6 decades, so he has to work holidays and stuff like that, I presume.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been working here for 20 years, but, you know, only a few of late. I kind of did a split career as opposed to a split shift. I was here, and then I went away, then I came back. Okay, here's that recipe. We are tasking you, and do continue. I'll continue to read from the list, but you all are having some great food this weekend. And I want you to tell me, what is your go-to favorite on the grill? Text it to 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So this is the one I like. And I'll just go slow, and then I'll repeat it again a little later on. But, you know, really it doesn't matter. All of these are sort of the same. If you just get the basics, give or take an ounce or two, you'll be fine. It says 1.5 pounds of flank steak and the juice of 1 lemon. You with me so far? Then 1/2 cup of soy sauce and 1/4 cup or more of red wine. So 1/2 cup of soy sauce, 1/4 cup of red wine. 3 tablespoons of vegetable oil and 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce, or however you say that one, Worcestershire. 3 tablespoons of vegetable oil and 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire. And then 1 large clove of garlic, sliced thin, pepper to taste. Optional, you could chop in some chives or celery seeds or chopped dill in there. But that's it. And you just marinate that thing for as long as you like. Then you put it on the grill. And they will weep openly when they first taste it. You know how when you're cooking on the grill and maybe the ends are cooked but the center isn't, and so you just kind of say, well, I'll just saw a little off here and see how we're doing. I do that a lot. I'll share that with my son or a friend or something. And, oh, that's a good thing. That's maybe the best part of the grilling experience. Because when it sits on the table and you eat it, that's swell and it's fun to do. But that moment where you're both cooking and tasting, you just saw off the little corner. So 1.5 pounds of flank steak, the juice of 1 lemon, 1/2 cup of soy sauce, 1/4 cup or more of red wine, then 3 tablespoons of vegetable oil, 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce, and then 1 large clove of garlic sliced. A little pepper in there to taste. If you want to add some chives or celery seed or chopped dill, you go right ahead. This is America. You get to do whatever you want. You know, yesterday on the show, I was mentioning that the New York Times on Sunday printed the U.S. Constitution in its entirety in a giant, I mean, it would fill a dorm room door. I mean, this could be a poster on your wall. It's a giant display of the U.S. Constitution, and it's annotated so that in either margin to the right or left, they have little paragraphs with lines then pointing to particular parts inside the Constitution itself. And so there's the 3/5 clause, or there's the 18th Amendment, or the 21st Amendment, and here's the very first paragraph and why that's so important. They talk about the 25th Amendment and how you can, because you don't think a president is capable any longer, have him removed from office. We talked about that yesterday. And for those of you that are thinking, oh, good, that's how we'll get out of this thick, you ain't, because it requires the vice president to agree. And I don't think that's going to happen. I didn't choose to talk about that now. I won't. But it was just kind of an interesting analysis. The 25th Amendment doesn't go without the vice president's approval. At least my constitutional law expert thinks. We've not really exercised it in this way. That is, if a president is assassinated or nearly so, then maybe you would find a way to put somebody else in place, the vice president, etc. But what about just because you think maybe the person is so stressed, working so hard, so tweeting that they're unable to execute the charges of the office? Nobody's tried that before, and he sure doesn't see that happening. So fair enough to that. But anyway, the Constitution displayed there was just really interesting reading. And if you don't sit and read it all, that'll be okay. But I recommend that you at least read some of it today. So back to the marinated flank steak. And then I described the cheesy potatoes, the Johnsonville brats. I don't think you can go wrong with that. These are my big four, if I think about it. And then I did this once upon a time at a cookout we had at my house, and my buddies and I thought that this was a really swell thing I did. And it was a recipe that I learned from the Weber Grill cooking class. Somebody earlier today, or was it yesterday, on this very radio station was saying, you know, if you take those cooking classes they have at Weber, those are really good. Well, guess what? Those are really good. And they're really reasonably priced, too, because you get so much food when you do it. It's just a really fun afternoon or late morning, depending on which of the classes you go to. But what we did was they take shrimp. Here again, you marinate it, and I'm not real sure on the marinade, but it had lemon juice in it, and it had garlic. And I don't think it much matters after that. So you and you can look it up online at the Weber website. But you take the shrimp, And then, you know how the shrimp is kind of in a half moon shape? Well, inside that half moon, you just slip a slice of andouille sausage, and then you skewer that bad boy and get about three or four of those on your skewer, all lined up, little half moons of shrimp with marinade on them, and then inside each of them, you know, inside that little half moon is a slice of andouille sausage. And just cook that long enough to cook the shrimp. Oh, that's a wonderful thing. We'll continue to follow the Illinois debt problem story here on WGN Radio, but it appears that the good news is that we've staved off junk bond status for the time being, which I think is sort of like the band leader on the Titanic saying, hey, good news, the captain says we can play another set. But we'll take it. Don't you get the feeling that the state of Illinois is going to start borrowing money from the same people who give you payday loans? That's about where we are now? Our governor's going to be standing in line behind someone trying to get their vehicle stickers. And at some point, the person on the other side of the glass is going to say, to the state of Illinois, here's what I'm going to do. That's how we're funding our roads and schools right now. I mean, it would only be embarrassing if it weren't so important, if it weren't so expensive. But it's just embarrassing. I don't know what the worst of it is, but maybe to me, the worst of the state's funding crisis has been that they won't even sell us lottery tickets. Think about that. The lottery ticket is about as close as you can get to stealing from someone and them saying thank you. Lottery tickets are this. You give someone money, and then you go away, and you have no expectation of getting it back, and everybody's cool with that. And the people that are taking the money don't want it from us because we're that big a risk. That's embarrassing. That's where the state of Illinois is. I said to Patty Vasquez yesterday, because she's been following this about as closely as anyone. I mean, literally, she scored an interview with Mike Madigan not that long ago, and that's never been done before. And I said to her, I'm not sure who I'm supposed to be angriest at. The governor, because he's intractable. The legislature, because they can't seem to come to terms with the governor. Mike Madigan, because he's Mike Madigan. I mean, really, I know what an easy target Mike Madigan is. And if that's the person that you would most put the blame on, I'm fine with that. But, you know, there's a governor who's not playing ball with these people. And that's sort of your job, too. So it's beyond frustrating. It's literally embarrassing. And as I said, if it weren't so important, you know, I mean, because it is so important, it's more than that. It's expensive. And so you say, okay, well, who are we going to blame on that? How does this thing get fixed? And you get the feeling right now that all they're going to do is kick it down the road for just a little while. I like the way the Sun-Times has been for, I don't know how many days they've been doing this, but every day on their editorial page, they post how many days without a state budget? 735. isn't that remarkable? So here we are, year three now, 735 days without a state budget. And just one other note about government news and numbers, and that is the Sun-Times editorial today, just below that, which isn't about the mess that the state budget is in, although the headline of their main editorial today is Brave the Fireworks and Pass a Budget. I get it. 735. But below that, did you see the Sun-Times editorial today? I want to share with you just a couple paragraphs of that, and then I'll pick up a couple of phone lines. The number's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. But it says, Donald Trump, America's professional wrestler-in-chief. And in part, the Sun-Times wrote this today. There is no doubt that the video Trump tweeted out on Sunday, cartoonishly showing himself beating up on CNN at a professional wrestling event, was an encouragement to violence against the media. Nothing new there. What's more fascinating is just how right he looked in that environment. Trump never looks comfortable behind his desk in the Oval Office. At a professional wrestling match, he belongs. Everything about Trump exudes pro-wrestling fakery. He brags and exaggerates and claims victories that everybody, except for a few sad souls who think pro-wrestling is legit, no's are not real victories. Did you see Hulk Hogan, excuse us, Donald Trump, brag on Monday about the great jobs numbers his administration has racked up? Truth is, job growth has slowed since Trump took office. With every new outrageous tweet, Trump adds to the evidence that he is temperamentally unfit to be president and lazy to boot. What kind of president, if he is hard at work on the big issues of our day, terrorism, health care reform, tax reform, and the like, has time to stew about what a couple of talking heads on CNN say about him? And yet Trump spends his mornings clicking through the cable news shows and lashing out via Twitter, going particularly hard on women critics. This stuff plays out fine with Trump's angry political base, but the rest of America, including a majority of Republicans, sees Trump for the boor and misogynist that he is. Happy 4th of July from your Chicago Sun-Times. It's 1:19. Let's go to Gene. Hey, Gene, this is John, and you're on WGN. Hey, what's on your mind?
Well, you know, there's two things that so seldom get mentioned. The biggest one is, over the years, even when you were back here on WGN full-time, nobody talks about the fact that if we don't have a tax hike, we will never be able to catch up with our bills.
Yeah.
And the nonsense started under Republican governors. It wasn't, you know, as goofy and narcissistic as Blago was. It got even worse, and now under Rauner, you know, all the statements I read say that it's gotten much, much worse. And we need the tax hike to save our kids and grandchildren. I mean, this debt will become unbearable. It's already bad enough.
Yeah.
If
I may, Eric Zorn has been saying that too. Eric Zorn, like, for instance, we do this Mincing Rascals podcast, and I was sort of foaming at the mouth about the income tax hike increase and the corporate tax increase. And they both shrugged, the people that were sitting around the table with me, and said, it's worse in other states. That's not so bad. And I said, how can you guys say that? And Zorn says, it's going to take a tax increase. We need more revenue. We will not cut our way out of this.
Right. Every economist says that. Yeah. Everybody in the know. I mean, this is just, as you say, is just ridiculous. It's off the charts craziness, and pressure needs to be brought to bear to get this accomplished. I mean, it's just the saddest thing. I'm glad you're back, because you're such a rational, witty, funny person, and you do get to the serious subjects, and I do really appreciate you being back, John. It's made my life much more bearable, I will say.
Well, my goodness, Gene, I hope that your life is getting better, and I'm sorry it was so bad that I'm going to make it somehow more bearable, but hang in there.
I'm in the 70s, and I've had RA since I was 19, and as the elders in the rural Wisconsin say, the chickens have come home to roost. But I'm keeping a good attitude about it, and I look so forward to your programs. Oh, my goodness, I can't tell you. Love the talent on WGN.
I do, too. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, I started the show today just saying that, having listened to the radio a lot because we don't have cable TV in my house right now, I've just come to appreciate this station that much more. And some of the things I've heard, I've been learning, I've been surprised, I've been entertained, I've been amused. It's all about the First Amendment. You hear people who say one thing, somebody else says a different thing. I think we have a nice smattering of opinions on this station. And some of the things I pointed out, particularly Dean's show on Sunday. I wanted to give the website, if you wanted to catch Dean's conversation that he had on Sunday about the Hedy Weiss controversy. Sun-Times critic is being criticized by much of the Chicago theater community for criticism of a new play at Steppenwolf, for Hedy's criticism of a new play at Steppenwolf. And by the way, you should read her review of it, because I think it's a glowing review. She said the writing is brilliant and the acting is brilliant, and the last 10 minutes are terrible. I don't know that is, would you be surprised to read that is the review that's getting her blackballed in town? So Dean had the pros and the cons on of trying to mute her views, and it started out on a simmer and then it boiled up, and it wasn't just about a fair hearing of the two sides of the issue. It was really about a fair hearing of fair hearings, like how much criticism do we tolerate, or how much criticism is fair? Boy, you could have that conversation about a number of topics these days, right? You can listen to that conversation Dean had by just clicking on WGNradio.com and go to the shows page. And there you'll see the Dean Richards Sunday Morning Show. It's the top post there. Can a review be too critical? WGNradio.com. Just click on the shows. You'll find Dean Richards Sunday Morning. It's right there. It's 1:24. All right, Chris and Steve and a few others want to chime in on who's to blame for the mess the state is in. And still more great things you'll enjoy on the grill. Saw an interesting piece online, and it was enough to make me call Steve Dale and ask him to come by and give us some tips on how to calm your pets during fireworks, shy of giving them half of one of those swell little pills, and maybe that's what he'll recommend. What tips, suggestions, and ideas does our pet expert have? Steve's going to say hi to us a little after 1:30. After 2 o'clock, we'll talk to one of the journalists in Champaign who writes for the Gazette down there. And we'll follow up on the story of the Chinese scholar who went missing, presumed dead. They've arrested the person and charged him with her homicide. It's got a bunch of fascinating and really weird wrinkles to it. We'll catch you up on that story a little after 2 o'clock. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines in the meantime. Hey, Chris, this is John. You're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you?
I just like to express my frustration with Trump. There is not a, he has the ultimate civil service job in the country. And there is not a police officer, firefighter, EMT, public works employee that would remain employed for so much as a day if A, they lied, or B, they lashed out at a constituent, no matter how provoked. And yet he gets away with it day after day after day. It's inexcusable.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the hardest thing for a lot of us right now is to sort of maintain your shock, because we're coming numb to some of his antics. And I think what if George Bush had done this? What if Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or John McCain had done any one of these things? You would have said, oh, my gosh. But Trump does them so often that you're sort of numb to it. And it's hard to maintain your perspective. And yet I think we need to do that. You need to stay focused on, because by the way, this North Korea thing I thought was very interesting right now. The president's tweet about this tweet about this and how he sort of drew China into it. And I thought, what a terrible way to do international foreign policy. But that's his MO. And then it becomes more than ridiculous. It starts to get a little frightening, doesn't it?
It does. And if we don't stay outraged, he's going to keep getting away with it. And somehow the Republicans are going to have to take control of this guy and do something.
Yeah. There's a piece on CNN today saying, why have the people in power not stepped up to Donald Trump? I don't have an answer to that. Some of you may think Donald Trump's doing a great job, but you wonder how history is going to score Reince Priebus and the rest of them, you know?
Yes.
Chris, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a good day. I have it around here somewhere. You've probably read it or heard about it yourself. The president's tweet. Stand by. It's not that. It's not that. There's Chris Christie on the beach again. Got to stop looking at that. There's the DUI statistics. Domati mentioned this earlier today. Domati's in the newsroom right now. Hi, Domati. How are you?
Hey, John. How's it going?
I'll find that quote in just a minute, but I looked up after you did this story earlier today how many people drive while drunk on the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
It's the number one DWI death day in America, right?
It is. It's the worst holiday when it comes to that.
I thought it was the day before Thanksgiving. I thought it might be New Year's Eve. I thought it might be Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. Those are all big boozy holidays in America. The 4th of July doesn't shock me. But some of the statistics about this really do. Let me run those at you after you do the news.
Hey, baby, it's the 4th of July.
It's 1:37. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. This is John Williams. You're listening to WGN Radio. Happy holidays, and thanks for spending part of the 4th with us. Domati just mentioned this story earlier. We talked about it going into the news. I just wanted to finish my note about that because there's a couple of statistics that are just good reminders of what to watch out for if you're driving today. Domati told us earlier that there are more drunk drivers on the road on the 4th of July than on any other holiday. It is the deadliest holiday for DUIs. In fact, more beer is sold on Uncle Sam's birthday than any other holiday, including St. Patrick's Day or New Year's Eve. It's the beeriest of our holidays.
Now, that's kind of surprising there.
Why do you say that?
I would think more so on New Year's Eve than even the 4th of July, right?
Yeah, I guess New Year's Eve might be more cocktails and champagne too.
That's a good point.
Whereas here, it's hot. Let's drink beer.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm
all for
studio.
The beer.
Hi, Steve Dale.
Hi. You know, I'm surprised, too. I would have thought for beer, St. Patrick's Day. Or my favorite holiday, Cinco de Mayo.
Oh.
Why is that your favorite holiday?
Can you say margarita?
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, now I get it. Let me finish this. 4th of July means more drunk drivers on the road. In fact, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety tells us the 4th of July is the worst day of the year for fatal crashes. Now listen to this. 40% of all highway deaths between 2007 and 2011, take a sample four-year span, 2007 to 2011, 40% of all of the highway deaths in that time were caused by drunk driving over the 4th of July weekend.
Wow.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me almost half of all the DUI deaths in that four-year span happened on the 4th of July weekends alone? That three-day, maybe four-day, I don't know how you calculate the 4th of July weekend, 40% of all of the highway deaths in that four-year span were caused by drunk driving over the 4th of July weekend.
So we should all stay. Wow was right. I mean, we should all stay home July 2nd through 6th.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
A DUI,
I never would have thought that,
can triple your car insurance. So then they do this. Say, well, triple. All right, that's not good, but it's not the end of the earth. A DUI can triple your car insurance premium for as long as 5 years. That means if you pay $150 a month now, you're at $450 a month. Spread that $300 extra over the next 5 years, and you've paid an extra $18,000 because of your DUI. The numbers vary by state, but the average DUI, when you add everything up, will cost between $5,000 and $25,000. Almost half of all the DUI deaths of the year happen on the 4th of July weekend.
And I have one more for you.
Okay.
Actually, the 4th of July weekend is known for one other thing. Hmm. More lost dogs than at any other time of year.
Yeah,
it's
true.
I believe it is.
Why, they just get scared and run.
Uh-huh. People tie out their dogs. Not only lost dogs, people will tie them up, and in an attempt to get away, they'll choke themselves.
Yeah, sure.
Horrible.
Sure. Steve Dale's in our studio for that very reason. I mean, last night we heard him, and we're going to hear him again tonight. I've got the list of all of the 4th of July fireworks, and there will be some near you. And it's not just that, Steve. You know, the organized ones, you can almost budget. Like, I know at 10 o'clock till 10:45, but it's the neighbors that are just shooting them off, and you don't even anticipate those.
I have lots of concerns about those. You're right. It's not, you can't anticipate, so you more difficult to deal with the pets. But moreover, I mean, every year there's fires on the rooftops of buildings because idiots are on the rooftops of buildings and they're letting fireworks go off. And you hear in the news people lose a finger, an arm. You know, I don't get it.
Well, if it's children that are doing that, then that's terrible. But if it's a bro who's on a rooftop in Wrigleyville
drinking beer
and he loses a hand, I think those are five fingers we really didn't need anyway.
I don't disagree.
Just one man's opinion. So yeah. What do we do with the nervous dogs?
Oh, man. You know, at this now, if you had asked me, and I wish you had, so next year I want to come on your show April 5th to talk about what to do about July 4th, that would be great because we'd have some time to plan.
That's 3 months. What would have happened in 3 months that would have helped?
Well, for dogs that are absolutely terrified, and some of these dogs that are terrified, John, I do believe, and cats on occasion, they think they are going to die. They have no idea what's going on. they are reacting what is appropriately for the animal. I mean, in a natural situation, you hear a loud and sudden noise. You hear a loud and unexplained loud and sudden noise.
Yeah.
You're going to duck. You will run. You will be scared. It's no different for our dogs. No one's explaining what's going on to
them. And
I
can process it. At least I go, oh, yeah, I know what that is.
And they cannot.
They don't.
They have no...
Especially my dogs.
And their
hearing, no clue.
Their hearing is so much better than ours. So if we hear it and it's loud, it's even louder for our dogs. Our dogs may actually be smelling it. You know, depending on how close you are to the fireworks, their sense of smell is 10,000 times more than ours. So it's conceivable that they are even smelling what's going on. And some of those fireworks, as you point out, the neighborhood ones, they are close very often, you know. So these dogs are absolutely terrified. Your question was, what do I do? What do I do if I had 4 months in advance? For dogs that are that afraid, for that segment, not all dogs, but for that segment, the most humane thing you can do is medication. It is. Why are you smiling at me?
No, it's okay. I thought you were going to say sell them. But
sell the fireworks? Yes. Sell
no, the
pets? No.
The dogs?
Not at
just
all.
Just transport them to some place that doesn't have fireworks. So, but you don't need 4 months of medication. You medicate them that day, right?
No. So the true anti-anxiety medication, not medication that makes them drowsy. That's old school. Forget about that. So what are you afraid of? Do you like snakes?
No.
Okay. So if this studio, the beautiful Allstate Showcase Studio, was the snake-filled, I'm talking hundreds of snakes in the studio, mm-hmm. and I gave you Benadryl or something that made you drowsy,
mm-hmm.
would you be any
right.
less afraid?
That's a good point, yeah.
You know, and it's the same with our dogs. So a true anti-anxiety medication plays around with those brain cells a little, so by adjusting them, and also you'd have time to do behavior modification. So you can play, and it's easy now. You know, go online and download from YouTube. You play the sounds of fireworks on your speakers at a very low level. The dog is on the other side of the house, not bothered at all. Over time, you raise the level little by little by little. It's called a desensitization and counter conditioning. You can even do it while the dog is eating at some point in time, so the dog associates something good with the loud sound of the fireworks. Now, does that exactly replicate the fireworks outside? No, there's no smell associated with it. It depends how good your speakers on your stereo are, I suppose.
Or how diligent you are. This sounds like a lot of work.
It's not. And it's pretty easy to do, but it takes a bit of time. Now, there is a medication that you can get that'll kick in the same day. The problem is today is the day, and there's nowhere to get it that's open. It's called Cilio, S-I-L-E-O. It is one of those anti-anxiety medications. You actually just, it's oral mucosal, which is a fancy way of saying you rub it on the gums of the dog, and it really works. Sometimes makes them a bit drowsy, but this is different because it's truly anti-anxiety, but how do you get it now?
Yeah.
So unless you know a pet
pharmacist. You go to your veterinarian, though? Is that what you do?
Yeah, but...
No, I know. It's the 4th of July,
yeah,
and it's 1:45 in the
exactly.
afternoon.
Exactly. That's the problem.
You know what?
So what do you do now? And I have an answer.
If I was a veterinarian, I would open. I would have special 4th of July hours.
Really?
Cilio sale. All right, so keep going, Steve.
The pharmacy company would like that. The pharma company would love to hear you say that. So for dogs that have mild fears, sometimes they just go off and cats in particular hide and they deal with it. You can help them along a little bit by plugging in a pheromone diffuser. Pheromones are natural occurring chemicals that help dogs or cats. Each is species specific to feel comfortable in their own surroundings. One is called Feel Away. One is called Adaptil. There I have good news. You can get them at Petco, PetSmart, places like that that I think might be open today.
Yeah, right.
That's number one. For a lot of animals, what we can do is distract them. So our dogs are very much like I am. They cannot do two things at the same time. They cannot multitask. They cannot be afraid at the same time that they're happy about doing something. So if you can distract your dog or cat with a feather toy, with a cat, you could stuff some treats into one of a numerous thousands of toys out there now that you could stuff treats or kibble in, and you can get your dog to work on that. Not just give your dog a treat, but something to really keep your dog busy for a time. If your dog is doing that, your dog can't be afraid at the same time. It's impossible. Their brains don't work that way. Now, I've got more. At the same time, where are you going to do this? You're going to do this hopefully in a basement or a room that's as far away as you possibly can from the noise. Mm-hmm. Close the windows, of course. Turn on the air conditioning. In addition to that, there's that thing that you read. If you have Amazon Echo Play WGN, I now say that should read, if your dog is afraid of fireworks, play WGN, because you pump up the sound on the radio, you hear John Williams, the king, your dog does, and that drowns out some of the noise, too. That's what you are really for, John, to drown out the noise
really,
of fireworks.
If that's the only purpose I serve in
that's
life,
it.
I will feel it was a valuable life lived. So would you say, then, that if the dog retreats to a place under the bed, some dark corner, and they're cowering in there, should I let them go there because it's dark and confined, or should I, you know, sort of extract them and try and nurture them?
So there's lots here that I want to answer. So nurturing them or just giving them treats like I described before, some have said years ago and still say it. Now you're rewarding the dog for being afraid. No. You're not doing that at all. So if you can get the dog to take a treat and have fun, you're doing something good and your dog will not be afraid. You're not rewarding your dog. By paying attention to your dog, you're doing what feels right for our hearts and you're doing a humane thing. I'm not sure that just petting many dogs is enough. For some dogs, that is, and that's wonderful if that works for your dog, you know. So if the dog or cat seems to be dealing with it, and that's a fine line there,
yeah,
you
right,
know,
right.
Let the dog or cat alone. If the animal is salivating, shaking, literally losing house training in the house.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you've got something else to deal with. And that's a challenge on July 4th. I talk to you in 6 months and we have time to prepare. Not nearly as much of a challenge. However, what I described about pumping up the John Williams show, closing the shades, closing the windows, giving your dog or cat something to do, for the vast majority of animals, not all of them, but the vast majority, that really does work.
312-981-7200. Steve Dale's in the studio. He knows about pets. 312-981-7200. You got a question, a comment, a trick? We're all ears.
A trick.
It's 1:52. Steve Dale is here answering questions, taking comments about when your animals can't handle the 4th of July, what do we do? I'm happy to at least hear you say that go ahead and medicate them. I mean, if that's a pill on a day, I'm not going to make an addict out of this animal, and I didn't do the 3 months of indoctrination
but
thing.
But it's not always a pill. So it's interesting because Nancy just sent me a message. Isn't it great the way people can reach you now?
Thank you for texting.
Yeah, it's not only texting, but it's Facebook in this case. And she wants to know, and it's exactly what you're asking. So she has a dog that also has thunderstorm anxiety, and as well as being afraid of fireworks. And dogs often do generalize, and dogs with one noise anxiety often have another one or two or three, or anything that makes a loud sudden noise will scare a lot of dogs. And she wants to know if medication will help with thunderstorm anxiety, and the answer is yes. And there isn't much. So with fireworks, you can desensitize and counter condition, like I said. You can play the sound of fireworks and play it a little louder, and even have your dog feed at the other side of the house a little bit and get a little closer to the speakers over time. And your dog will associate, actually, the sound of fireworks potentially with something really, really good. It often does work. With thunderstorms, no. It can't, because it's not only the sound of the thunder, which you can recreate sort of, you know, on your computer. But how do you recreate the visual effect of lightning, the electricity that the animals feel in the air and associate with the thunderstorm? I mean, dogs with true thunderstorm anxiety feel the barometric pressure change even before Tom Skilling knows, the dogs know. I know, that's hard to believe, that anyone could be better than Tom Skilling. So there's so much going on there that medication is the only thing that works for dogs with true, really bad thunderstorm anxiety. And I've heard of and have seen dogs that it's so bad they actually want to jump through a window.
Yeah. And well, we give our dogs on occasion some pill. I'm not exactly sure what's going on there. Brenda takes care of this. But one time when he has it, he, Bingo, would act kind of drunk, you know, like he'd walk and he'd kind of fall over sideways. He's an old arthritic dog anyway. His caboose doesn't always keep up with his engine anyway, but there he is walking. All of a sudden his trailer just kind of falls over and he jackknives. And I'm like, oh, what's with that? And I go, oh, he's kind of drunk is what he is. That's the way he acts. I guess that's just the effect or a side effect of the little pill we gave him.
I don't know. And like, I don't know what you gave him, so I don't know. But like older people, older dogs are more likely to have adverse responses or more dramatic ones. I like all the train references, though. That's
but it works, too, though. I mean, so I'm like, I'm sure he's not thrilled about it. He's probably a little confused going, well, it used to work. Now I don't know what's happening back there. But he was also a little less anxious and all of that stuff.
That's a good thing. By the way, I don't want you to miss or your show to miss what happened in Chicago just a couple of days ago. Dr. Niels Peterson was here.
Oh, my God. Well, how about that? Here's Niels Peterson.
I knew you'd be excited. So he is the guy who wrote the first book on cat health. And incidentally, I've got the book. I could prove it to you. Next time I come in, I can bring the book.
Promise me you will.
Okay. He is a brilliant researcher. There's something in cats called feline infectious peritonitis. That sounds bad, doesn't it? Mm. It is pretty bad. It's FIP for short, and it is fatal. What even worse, it kills mostly kittens. So it's a tragic thing. And veterinarians took decades to even understand this disease. There's nothing like it in dogs or in people. It's very complicated as to how it works. Now, for the first time ever, announced at the Wynn Feline Foundation Symposium, and I do happen to be on their board of directors. By the way, the Wynn Feline Foundation funds cat health studies. So if you have a cat, pretty much everything you know about that cat was funded once by the Wynn Feline Foundation. Dr. Peterson announced a drug that seems to be working in clinical trials so far to actually cure, I say that word carefully, cats with FIP. It's only clinical trials. And what's also interesting, not only the fact that, okay, finally now we're doing this, the drug is related to a drug that helps people with HIV/AIDS. Same class of drug.
Wow. What is it? Excuse me. I wonder how that came about. Were they, like, sometimes somebody's using one drug for something else and they find out, oh my gosh, this cures erectile dysfunction as well. I don't suppose there was any...
Do you have personal experience in this area?
All I'm saying is I wonder how it is that they noticed that something that is HIV helpful,
yes,
is also going to help these cats.
I can answer that. He could do Dr. Peterson a far better job of answering that. So years ago, they tried antibiotics. That didn't work. This is a viral disease. And even you know that an antibiotic isn't going to work for a viral disease. They tried a vaccine. Vaccine did not work. They tried all sorts of different things of cancer drugs. Everything but chicken soup, I believe, has been tried for FIP. Nothing at all has worked. And when the antivirals came about for hepatitis C also and some other human problems, Dr. Peterson said this is a similar type of virus. And then I can get very technical and talk about the kind of virus, but it's a related virus.
Hmm.
And because of that, I wonder...
No kidding.
...if I can get this drug, first of all.
What a leap.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. It is amazing. So to learn more about it, you can check it out on my blog, which is stevedale.tv. You could also subscribe to that blog, which I know John Williams checks out every single morning.
Well, I don't know if I'm following you on the Twitter, because that's how I'm getting a lot of my information these
days. I'm on the Twitter.
Let me,
Steve Dale Pets.
Hold on a second here.
I'm not as focused as I am on Facebook.
Steve.
You can find me on Facebook as well.
Dale.
You can find me in the studio Sunday mornings at 6:30. I'll just keep going, John.
My phone just died.
All right.
So I will follow you if I don't on the Twitter and all of those other platforms. Steve, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
It's always a pleasure to be here with royalty.
I'm not king yet. I want to be king someday. The paperwork
I
is
thought
tied
you
up.
Were.
It's tied up in Cook County. It hasn't gotten out yet.
That's not what I read on Twitter.
Violetta Podramatic just walked through our studio. I didn't know she was working this afternoon. I suppose she is getting ready for the afternoon show with the, I don't know, the Rose doing Rose show this afternoon, Domati, but Violetta's in the house. I was going to tease her about the fact that she was talking yesterday about being at the Eyes to the Skies Balloon Fest in Lyle. And they do the thing where it's tethered and you go up and float around, see the world. And they said the conditions were too windy and they didn't want to do it. That is, the people operating it, they said it's not safe. And Violetta said, oh, no, I really want to go now. And I don't understand a person that wants to do that.
It's a daredevil we got here.
I had no idea. And she's like, yeah, come on, that'll be really fun. Let's go. And I'm not even crazy about getting up in those. They look beautiful. I'm a fan of the fest. My first year here at WGN Radio. I went to the Eyes to the Skies Balloon Fest, so I'm a lover. I'm a supporter. It's just I ain't going to go up in your balloons. Thank you very much. I'm happy you are, though.
Violetta, that's tough there. That's...
And then if they said, and by the way, it's kind of rocky up there, so we really shouldn't do it. Now she doubles down. I didn't know she was built that way. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to go do that. It's 2:08. Okay, so this is the last hour of the show today for me. And then Violetta and whoever else you're going to drag in here at 3 o'clock will entertain you here on WGN. We started out talking about hot dogs and cookouts, and we'll continue to read some of your favorite go-to things on the grill. Thank
really
you,
Steve. Really quickly, John, if I may, some breaking news to the newsroom. Governor Bruce Rauner has just vetoed that bill, the bill that started in the House, went to the Senate, increasing the income tax by 32%, and a spending plan that has just been vetoed by Governor Bruce Rauner.
Which we thought he might do.
Yeah, okay, he definitely announced that.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, there goes your special session, kids. More about that then down the road, too. Are you following the story of what happened in Champaign-Urbana at the University of Illinois? That international scholar, a Chinese woman, came to the United States. And if you watch the video, you saw a car drive by her, turn around, and then come back. She was on her way to look at an apartment. She was running late, and the vehicle pulls up, and you don't have any audio, but from a distance you see her talk apparently to a person through the passenger side window, and then she gets in. That's the last we have seen of her. Brett Christensen has been charged with her kidnapping. I have more questions than maybe anybody has answers for about this. Julie Wirth joins us on WGN Radio from the Champaign-Urbana Gazette. I'm saying Gazette. Julie, what is the name of the newspaper? I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's good to be with you. It's the News Gazette.
News Gazette.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. I presume
no
this has dominated your news coverage. The whole country's been following it, certainly in Illinois, but it must be what everybody's talking about down there.
Yeah, it certainly is, especially, you know, in the last week or so, last few days since Friday when they made the arrest of Brent Christensen. In fact, I was telling somebody here, I've been getting questions about this from my family and other parts of the country. You know, the story's been picked up across the country and in China, you know, where Yingying Zhang was from. It's truly a global story at this point.
And it reminds us how many young people come to the United States, from China particularly, not just to go to colleges, but a lot of them are going to the good high schools as well, staying in dormitories and paying premium tuitions to go to good high schools in the hope of getting the Western view and a Western education.
Yeah, we're seeing that more and more. I did a story last year about just how the extensive Chinese community here at the U of I has had an impact on Champaign-Urbana, and I ran into some students who, in fact, had done what you said, you know, gone to high school either in other parts of Illinois or up in the suburbs in hopes of getting into a good university here. You know, you're seeing rising incomes over in China, you know, as the economy has grown, and people don't have large families, so they're sending their one or two children abroad for Western education.
I mean, it's tragic in this case, but it is a reminder, too, of how much hope America holds for a lot of people, that well-to-do families in China will send their beloved son or daughter here to America when they're 15, 16, 17 years old, in the hopes of not just getting a good education, but getting sort of the Western cultural view so they can be more rounded people. They send them to America for that. I mean, it kind of does your heart good, this story notwithstanding.
Yeah, as you said, this in particular is a very sad story. But yeah, I think that's the general trend. And a lot of them are, you know, the university system here is sort of second to none, and they know that. And they're gaining expertise, and in many cases staying then. But in some cases going back and trying to build up the university system there as well. I know in her case, she was hoping to become a professor, you know, get her PhD at the U of I and become a professor. I don't know if she planned to stay here or go back home, but her family was from modest means, you know, and this was her dream to come, and she'd rarely been out of the country before this particular trip. She just got here in April. So anyway, it's very sad.
So she was new to this country, new to the U of I, just in April had arrived in the country?
Yeah, I think it was late April, and she was a visiting scholar. She had a one-year appointment to do research. She had just gotten her master's degree, I believe, at a university back in China, and had hoped to maybe this fall or sometime in the next year enroll in the PhD program here. She was studying, I think, photosynthesis or crop productivity,
right,
and was attracted, you know, by the agriculture school at U of I.
Can you tell me more about her? Did she have friends? Did she have a network of support? Was she all alone there looking for an apartment? What was happening that day?
Well, she was fairly new. You know, she'd only been here 5 or 6 weeks, and her friends, I think she, through the grapevine, had, you know, knew some people on campus and had gotten an apartment on campus at this graduate student housing complex, but she wanted to get into more of a situation where she'd meet other people, perhaps share an apartment with some friends. I don't think she had built up a lot of close friends yet, just because she hadn't been here very long, but there's a large Chinese community here. There's more than 5,000 Chinese students on campus, so I'm sure she, you know, and they have rallied around her tremendously, and her family, since she went missing. But, you know, once she went missing, you know, they kind of got together, and one of her good friends from New York has flown to Champaign-Urbana and served as a translator for her family, which has also flown here from China. So there is a very strong community of support here ever since she went missing.
But despite the, but you can almost see what's happening here, too. 26 years old, obviously very intelligent, but also maybe naive about this situation, you know,
Exactly. I think people come to Champaign-Urbana thinking, you know, it's not that big of a city, you know, and they, her family said she was smart and could take care of herself, obviously, but, you know, she was on a campus, you know, the person who was arrested was another graduate student, which she may or may not have known, but, you know, probably thought, okay, you know, this nice person's giving me a ride. I don't know. We don't know what was in her head, but.
Or his, for that matter, do we? I mean, so, but we do have the video. She's standing there. She's not. She does. That doesn't get on the bus. I don't remember exactly what the.
So she took one bus to a part of campus and was going to transfer to another one. And the FBI's report said that she tried to flag one down and missed it.
Right.
So she walked to the next bus stop and was standing there, I think, when he pulled up. So, or when the car pulled up, I should say.
Yeah. The I have the. Criminal complaint here, and the way the investigator describes it, the car went by, looks like it went around the block or doubled back and came back to her. There's this conversation, and then somehow or another, for some reason or another, maybe just because he said, hey, do you need a ride, you look lost, you can imagine something like that happening. She's saying, yeah, I've got to go check out an apartment, I missed my bus. Maybe something like that happened, but she gets in the car. What do we know about him? What do we know about Brent Christensen?
He is from Wisconsin initially. Stevens Point, I believe, is his hometown. And he went to the University of Wisconsin, got his degree in math and physics from there, got into the U of I's physics program, the doctoral program, which is one of the best in the world. And in 2013, arrived here on campus. He's been a TA. He's been a research assistant. He's worked with professors there. Nobody had any clue about anything going awry with him. At least everyone we've talked to has just been sort of shell-shocked by this whole thing. But about a year ago, in May of 2016, he opted out of the PhD program and said he wanted to just finish his master's and then leave, and then which he did in this past May in 2017. So he had graduated just a couple of months ago and was still in town, though, was still in Champaign.
Hmm.
And apparently, his lawyer told us yesterday he had not, he wasn't currently employed, but he was, or job hunting, I guess. He didn't really say if he was actively job hunting, but, you know, had yet to find a job.
So. He has no criminal history, no mental health history that we're aware of?
Well, we don't know about any criminal history. His lawyer said, you know, he might have had a speeding ticket or two, but, you know, the lawyer, I think, just, you know, he was just arrested Friday. The lawyers only met with him a few times. I don't know how much he knows, and we have yet to talk to anybody who was close with him. We've, you know, talked to people sort of around the periphery, and some of the people who lived at his apartment complex described him as creepy. I don't know, you know, that's easy to say after the fact, but they felt uneasy. But, you know, other than that, none of his fellow grad students, none of his professors noticed anything unusual.
Mm-hmm.
You probably read the complaint that they found he had searched out some odd websites on his phone.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that. But before we do, though, how was it then that he became a suspect in this case?
He, when they found the video with the car, they located, I think, 18 cars in the whole county of that make. And so I think they just kind of went down the list and were interviewing all the owners. He, according to the affidavit, the criminal complaint initially told them he didn't know what he'd been doing that day. He was probably home. But while they were there, they noticed there was a crack in the hubcap of his car. They went back to the video, looked at it. That same crack was in the video, the car video. And also, they both had a sunroof, which, you know, obviously other people could have had a sunroof. But so they went back to talk to him a few days later and took him in for questioning, which he agreed to, I think. And while he was there, he told them that he had actually picked up an Asian woman that day and offered to give her a ride, but that she panicked when he took a wrong, she thought he took a wrong turn because she had the route mapped out to where she wanted to go, and that he let her out of the car in some residential neighborhood. So at that point, I think the next day, they also searched his apartment that day while he was being questioned. Someone else at the apartment let them in, and they, I think they either took his computers or, you know, looked over things. And then he was under surveillance from then on. And about a week, I can't remember the date, but they overheard him, I think, last Thursday night. They said they caught him on audio tape saying that he had kidnapped her and held her at his apartment for a time. And that based upon that, they were arresting him. They didn't provide any other details of where, who he said that to or where or, you know, how they captured that audio. But that was what led to his arrest Friday night.
His attorney has said he's not guilty. And, you know, the when we discover his side of the story, we'll see that there's more to that. Of course, he's an advocate, and maybe there's more to it to be discovered. I guess in theory, it's possible that he did what he said. He let her out of the car because she was panicking and something else happened at that new at that second location. That's conceivable.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's I'm sure that's possible that, you know, and that maybe if that in fact happened, maybe that's why he didn't tell the truth the first time because he knew he'd look guilty.
But yeah, no kidding.
We don't really know. We don't really know.
Well, it doesn't help, though, that on his mobile device he has, I don't know exactly how they do this, but they were able to tell that he had visited a site or was at least monitoring a blog or a chat room, Abduction 101. What can you tell me about that?
Well, I haven't personally looked at it. I will.
I have, by the way. Well, here's what I did. I mean, literally, I typed in Abduction 101, and it's a forum, and it's, you know, you've got to sign in, or then you've, you know, and I didn't get past the first wall. But it tells
probably
you how many people are there. I know. And then, you know, I can justify it, I guess, if I really needed to know more. But I was just trying to figure out how does a forum like that exist and why is it allowed to exist if its title is Abduction 101? But it comes across as a sort of sex fantasy thing, which is protected.
I think that's what it is. And I think it's, you know, supposed to be for people role-playing these things, you know, sort of with consent, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't
right.
know. I haven't looked at it. I read, you know, we ran a story the other day about it. I think it was carried and it was an Associated Press story where they looked more into it more closely. And it had come under some trouble. I don't know if you saw that because of a case in Australia or elsewhere where, you know, it led to harm for some individuals. So they kind of talked about things that were off limits, and, you know, the owner of the website sort of put out some rules saying you can't do this and this and this and trying to absolve, I think, of any liability. But I think it's still sort of questionable. But I don't know. It's a whole community I'm not aware of, I will say.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, you know, I'm not shocked to hear that there's something like that or that there's all sorts of fetishes and people have interests, and if consenting adults want to do it, that's the world we live in. I'm not going to worry about it. But the fact that there would be a forum or a website dedicated to that and that it could be used this way sure does give you pause about whether or not the internet should support those sorts of rooms, that sort of communication. But that's another subject. Okay, so he visits that place too, we believe.
That was back in April, they said, in the affidavit. That's all we know. So I don't know. Obviously, that was a red flag to them in lining up their case. So it doesn't look good.
So then where is he today?
He is being held in custody, in federal custody, in Macon County, which is Decatur, Illinois. I think they have an arrangement with people there, the feds do. He was brought to Urbana yesterday for his hearing, his first initial court appearance, where they just read him his charges, and the attorney asked for more time to determine, you know, make arguments whether or not he should be released on bail or detained until his trial. So that's going to happen tomorrow afternoon. They're going to have what they call a detention hearing.
Julie Wirth is on a phone line. We're talking obviously about the story of not only Brent Christensen, but obviously about Yingying Zhang, the scholar from China who was believed to be kidnapped and believed to be killed in somewhere in the Champaign-Urbana area. But, you know, so then what do they think happened after that? For instance, how are they concluding, Julie, that, I mean, this is what we're hearing, that she's believed to not be alive? Is it because of something he has said, or do they have some evidence that concludes that she was killed? Can you just talk a little bit more about that in a minute? We're visiting with Julie Wirth. She's a reporter with the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. We're talking about Yingying Zhang, the Chinese scholar at the University of Illinois, missing and presumed dead. Brent Christensen, a young man who himself, a bit of a scholar, a physics graduate student there, not at the time, but evidently a brilliant man in his own right, has been charged with her kidnapping. But how do we know then what may have happened? For instance, they say they don't think she's alive. Why are they saying that, Julie?
You know, they haven't said a lot about that, I'll be honest with you. That's the million-dollar question right now. The only thing in the affidavit that was mentioned in terms of physical evidence was that they noticed that the front passenger door of the car, of Christensen's car, had been, they said, cleaned more diligently than other doors, which could indicate some attempt to conceal or destroy evidence. And then they have him saying on tape, they say, that he had abducted her and held her at his apartment. So I assume they've picked up some evidence, perhaps there, perhaps somewhere else, that indicates that. But they're being very tight-lipped about this. And they have not charged him with murder, which I think is a little bit unusual in a federal case anyway. You know, the kidnapping would be the big federal crime here. So we're kind of waiting to see how all of that plays out.
John, I'm not really shocked. Many of the best-selling books in our country are based on serial killers. This Nancy Grace phenomena is not good for the mind. And this texter says, the bus she waved at would have picked her up. This might not have happened, says Karen. I think a lot of us have seen that. Some bus drivers will slow down even though we're past the stop and accommodate a passenger. Some of them don't. Oh, but had that bus been there for her, maybe this would not have happened. But it's also unnerving to think that maybe just because she was convenient, he kidnaps her. You know, you wonder, would it have been somebody eventually? What was the impulse that drives somebody at that instant, that person? I mean, he doesn't have a history of this sort of thing. I know it sounds like I'm convicting the man in my little monologue here, but the police have arrested him and charged him, and some of this doesn't look good. Somebody obviously took her and did something. And you wonder, was that person just waiting to prey on someone? Eventually, would this have happened? I guess those are unanswerable questions, huh, Julie?
Yeah, I mean, those thoughts have gone through our heads as well, and including the question about the bus. I'm sure the driver didn't see her, or he probably would have stopped. It's a pretty friendly bus system here, and, you know, not terribly crowded all the time. So I don't know, but I keep thinking every time I watch the video, don't get in. You just want to go back and change it. But I don't know. The only thing related to that, there had been some rumors in the Chinese community or perhaps complaints that there had been a white male driving around trying to pick up Asian women. The police have only taken one actual report of that, however, and they cautioned, at least early on in this case, that they had no idea if it was related to this. It was in a different part of the city. So, you know, not terribly far from campus either, but, you know, they don't know if it's connected. So that, of course, has everybody speculating, too, whether this might have been, you know, a pattern or, you know, like you said, just someone looking for this opportunity, and it all came here. So
there was a rally in support of her, and at that rally, pictures have surfaced of a man who looks like the suspect. Is it confirmed that he was, in fact, at the rally for her?
Yes, in one of the more stunning turns in this case, I think. Actually, on Saturday, the police confirmed for us that he was actually there. Not the police, I'm sorry. One of our sources confirmed for us that he was there, and we had photos of it, but we weren't sure what our photos showed, you know, were actually him. But they've since, you know, confirmed that officially, that he was at the rally, too. And several media outlets, I think, and several people have pictures with him in them, I think. So
draw your own conclusions. One of my producers said to me, well, now, why in the world would he be there? And I have a number of theories about that, but I can imagine there's a certain curiosity. Here again, I'm convicting the poor man in advance, but if you were involved in that crime, I think there's a mindset that would like to come back and see what you wrought. And that's not shocking to me that he would be in the crowd somehow.
I think authorities will tell you that's not uncommon, like with arsonists and other criminals, to come back and see, yeah, their handiwork, I guess. But again, we don't, as you said, we don't know if he's guilty. And, you know, there could have been another reason he showed up. Maybe he knew somebody who knew her, and I don't know. Who knows?
Well, lastly, then, I'm reading from Associated Press and the Chicago Sun-Times. Monday, the judge ordered Christensen to return to court in Urbana on Wednesday. That would be tomorrow, to determine bail. So he's being held without bail now. I presume it's going to be a prohibitively large number. Preliminary hearing is then set for July 14th, huh?
right. So that would be the first hearing in the actual case, you know, beyond just the bond question.
Well, you can you
trial,
can make...
The trial would be somewhat later, I think.
So. Yeah. Well, you can make a case without a body, but it sure is helpful if you have one. I mean, you know, for all we know, she... Here again, they know what we don't. But
yeah.
We don't know that she's alive or dead. We don't know if they know her whereabouts. It's tough to make a case when you don't have the victim or the body. So we'll see how that goes.
I know, and it's very sad for her family who, you know, her father flew here, her aunt, her boyfriend, they all came in from China, and they have said they're not leaving without her, you know, one way or the other. So I think if the authorities knew where she was, well, I don't know, they might know where she is, but I think, you know.
We would have heard something about
the body,
that.
I think we'd know, yeah.
There, did I not read somewhere that there's been an outpouring of support for those family members, lodging, food, just helping them survive while they're here in America?
Yes, as I said, the Chinese community has stepped up in a big way, and other people too, actually, in town here on campus especially. They started blanketing the city with flyers just within a couple of days after she was reported missing. I know we had one posted outside our front house, our front of our house, and I was like, oh my gosh. And but they've rallied around the family. The U of I officials have as well, you know, providing translators and food and places for them to stay. And there were a couple of different meetings, you know, where they tried to inform people what was happening in the case, and then this rally last week, the day before he was arrested. So, yeah, it's been pretty, you know, touching to see. And they were all at the courthouse yesterday as well with banners and signs and just packed the courtroom, you know, just to show support.
Julie Wirth, reporter with the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. Julie, I may call you again if you don't mind. I sure appreciate you giving us this much time on your holiday, too. But as we follow the story, we'll reach out to you again down the road.
That sounds great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Julie Wirth in Champaign. Spain. A little Marvin Gaye for your holiday. As I'm sure you recall, 1983 NBA All-Star Game, Marvin Gaye. Nicely done, Marvin, if you're listening. Well done, sir. It's 2:38, and I know he wants my approval. By the way, did you see the story in the Chicago Tribune today on the editorial page? It's just a commentary about Chicago's tunnel, subtitled, "The Mayor Wonders Whether Elon Musk's Idea of a Subterranean Superhighway Can Connect O'Hare and Downtown." Emmanuel first needs to explain, does the city really need this? Oh, of course the city needs this. We need not only a tunnel between O'Hare and downtown, we need one from, I don't know, the southwest suburbs to northwestern. I would run one crisscross to it going southwest to northeast. And then I would run one from northwest Indiana into, I don't know, the loop. Maybe with a left turn, kind of drop them off out by Oakbrook. This would cost trillions of dollars. But what the hey? If Boston can have one, are you kidding me? Don't you think that would be awesome? How many times have you been sitting in traffic and thinking, boy, if all 12 of these lanes were just going in one direction, we could get somewhere. But no, you got people coming the other direction. You got construction. But if somebody wants to figure out a way to tunnel under the Eisenhower, heck, I'm already going to pay. Now I'm behind a soda tax. That will make a liter bottle of soda cost $49. And I would start to drink grape knee-high again if they did that. I don't drink grape knee-high so much anymore. It gives me a tummy ache. But anyway, I would start to pay for a soda tax if you said, and in your lifetime, we will have a tunnel. Brenda and I just bought a house in Chicago, a condo. And by that, I mean a closet with two baths. Anyway, we were looking at a place in northwest Indiana. But, and I can see all of the charms of that. It was very tempting. But transportation was a big issue. And the people that we were talking to would often say, yeah, but they're going to get another rail line out there. They're going to get another rail line out there. They're going to have another metro stop out there. And so with two tracks going, it'll be a lot faster and more efficient. And I said, okay, when do you think that other rail line is going to get out there? you know, it's sort of like the waiter will be here any minute. Ah, they're going to get that out there. I said, okay, but I need it within the next 15 years, and I'd like to have it Thursday. Well, they're going to get another rail line out there. Doesn't do me any good right now or for the foreseeable future. Get another rail line out to Northwest Indiana. We should do that. That is necessary for a lot of reasons. One is it would make it easier for people to escape, and it would also make it easier for people to commute back in if they so chose. But I could see how that would benefit both states, and it would just grow the region. It would make it better. There was a story in the Tribune the other day that talked about the 10-plus multi-billion-dollar projects we have going on in the Chicago area. Did you realize that? I mean, money is being spent. Now, I'm up for a tunnel underneath. Violetta, that might change your work a little bit. Violetta Podramatic is getting ready now for the Rokan show starring Brian Noonan. But you could do tunnel reports as well.
Isn't part of the fun of going somewhere waiting in traffic?
What are you, a traffic reporter?
Listening to the radio, 720, keeping you company.
It would actually, now that you mention it, be not in our best interest if we move traffic along a little quicker. It'd be less time to be stuck in your car forced to listen to the radio. Is that what you're saying?
Forced. It's a pleasure for everyone to listen.
My bad. What am I talking about? Incidentally, we were talking about you a little while ago and how courageous you sounded on the radio when the Eyes to the Sky Festival people said, it's too windy, it's too rocky, we can't send you up in the balloon, and you wanted to go even more. That's the way it sounded on the radio.
Yeah, of course I wanted to go. I thought they were being a little bit difficult.
Sort of tentative about it. It's like, oh, come on, it's fine. Let's just go.
It's tethered. It's not like I was going anywhere. We're like 50, 60 feet up. What's the worst that can happen?
Right. I don't know. Fall 50 or 60 feet. That would be the worst that could happen when you're 50
or 60. Get struck by lightning.
Yeah, explosion. I don't know.
We're going to bring up marshmallows, and we're going to be fine.
Yeah, and that little torch thing. Yeah, you were going to make s'mores up there, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
While you're fighting 70-mile-an-hour gale force winds, and you're good about that.
I don't know. Certain things, just ignorance is bliss.
I guess so. I mean, are you, though, like, I don't know, does turbulence in an airplane bother you?
Or no.
Roller coasters don't bother you? I'm thinking of things that bother some people. You're not easily scared, huh?
No, I'm not. I jumped out of an airplane at the Air and Water Show, so that was probably the scariest thing.
What's that? What, at the Air and Water Show?
I went skydiving with the Golden Knights at the Air and Water Show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That was fun, huh?
It was fun.
A little frightening, though. Boy, there's a moment of truth when you jump out of that plane.
13,000 feet, free fall for a minute and a half, going 120 miles per hour.
Really? That long of a free fall? Wow. And at any point during that 90 seconds, did you think, maybe I don't want to be doing this?
In the first 2 seconds.
Really? Yeah. You thought, oh, this is ridiculous.
It's kind of painful because you're falling so fast. But other than that, once the parachute deploys, it's a smooth ride.
You would bungee cord jump then too, huh?
Yeah, I've done that at Six Flags.
Really?
I think most things like that don't scare me. What terrifies me is birds. I'll cross the street if there's a group of pigeons. They just are horrible. It's very scary.
Sort of stumbled onto a topic I really don't have the time for here now, but evidently you're kind of messed up.
Yeah, we definitely don't have time for that.
Jump out of an airplane, you'll bungee cord jump at Six Flags, pigeon on the other side, you'll go the other way.
Yeah, they're terrifying.
So you haven't watched Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds lately then, huh?
Nope.
Yeah. Everybody's got a thing. I got a friend who says, well, everybody's got a thing. Violetta's things, birds. Rich wanted to jump in here. Hey, Rich, this is John. You're on the air. What can we do for you, Rich?
Well, hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. I would have called a couple hours sooner, but I was sitting in traffic.
Yeah.
Anyway, the topic of competitive eating. I found an old sheet of mine with remarks from George Carlin. And 10 years ago, he had the George Carlin's New Rules for 2007.
Right.
And new rule number 8 was, probably still is, competitive eating isn't a sport.
Thank you.
It's one of the 7 deadly sins. ESPN recently televised the U.S. Open of competitive eating because watching those athletes at the poker table is just damn exciting. What's next? Competitive farting? Oh, wait, they're already doing that. It's called the Howard Stern Show.
Nice. Nice, nice. Yeah, I appreciate your at least acknowledging my amazement and frustration with ESPN's coverage of the annual hot dog eating contest. Yeah, we've been reporting
it
in the news.
There are other eating contests. So there's one good old days in Winfield, meatball eating at one of the restaurants. And I cut out an article several years ago pointing out that somebody had actually choked to death at one of these events. And I said, hey, can't you think of something a little safer? But they didn't think my deal was so hot and kept on doing it.
Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for the update there, Rich.
Okay. You're welcome, John.
Have a good day. By the way, for some reason, that reminded me of the president's tweet because he said, can't he think of something else better to do? The tweet, if you... we're following it. This is the president's latest. About North Korea, our president has tweeted the following. This is one of his latest. Does this guy have anything better to do with his life? Hard to believe that South Korea and Japan will put up with this much longer. Perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all. Okay, now that's a weird tweet. Not that any of them are normal anyway. That's not his stock in trade. But that last sentence is like, I wonder how China hears that. Do they even receive this as sort of a direct communication by the president of the United States? Here's his thoughts. Here's his willing. Here's what he wants to happen. Perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all. This nonsense being the testing of anti-ballistic missiles, ICBMs, actually, the intercontinental ballistic missiles, as well as the medium-range missiles. It's not yet certain that they'd be able to arm them or that they would be accurate if they were. But if they were armed and if they were pointed in the right direction and flew and didn't blow up, who knows what havoc they could wreak? They could reach Guam, where we have troops. They could reach Japan. They could reach our allies in South Korea, obviously. This thing was 1,500 miles in the air and flew for over half an hour, about 45 minutes. So they got that going for them. So how do you... hopefully Rex Tillerson has something that's a little more, I don't know, thoughtful or... I don't know what the word is, but doesn't sound like this. The president's tweet is, does this guy have anything better to do with his life? Hard to believe that South Korea and Japan will put up with this much longer. Perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea. What is a heavy move on North Korea? What is a heavy move? Is it drop an atom bomb on them? Is it surgically strike their facility so they can't do this anymore? What is a heavy move? China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all. End this nonsense once and for all strikes me as being a pretty heavy move. Like, as heavy moves go, that would be a very heavy, heavy move. You're going to end this once and for all. So he wants China to do something so definitive that North Korea will never again be able to launch long-range missiles or develop nuclear weapons. I think all I have is 140 characters here. Now, once again, maybe Mr. Tillerson has more, or maybe the president is talking to people beyond this, and he's more definitive about what his intentions are. You'd hope. But you wonder then, okay, but at least for all the rest of us, this is what he's telling us is his thought. And it's maddening because you, in fact, don't know what he's telling you. And say, well, he can't tell you everything. But don't do this. Don't confuse us or alarm us. Listen to my voice. I'm confused and alarmed. When I get confused and alarmed, this is how I sound. Perhaps China. Hey, China. I bet you're following me on the Twitter. Perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once. And by the way, this isn't nonsense. I know what nonsense is. I've raised children. I can show you some nonsense. Missiles with nuclear warheads is not nonsense. So that's what we got. Mark Carman's getting ready with sports. He'll be in with Brian Noonan and Violetta and the gang. Domiti Pongo's in the newsroom. Rowan Anna and that gang are taking the day off, although it's nice to see Violetta in the WGN radio studios. You know, the nice thing about the 4th of July is that it's just so much fun to wear your 4th of Julianist stuff. you red, white, and bluest. Carm, you're down the hall and looking at me under a little TV monitor. Are you wearing red, white, and blue clothing, sir?
No, John, I am I'm most definitely not. Now I feel like I need to apologize.
That's not American. You're either with us or against us. Why aren't you wearing red, white, and blue?
I mean, I got a little bit of a light blue T-shirt here, actually, a little collared
golf
shirt.
Did it even dawn on you today? Did you say, no, I'm not going to go with the people, or did you not even think about it?
Didn't think about it. I did fly back from Kansas City from a wedding today, John, and the gate attendant was completely decked out, and I said to her, you look amazing. Does that count?
How about you, Violetta? Are you wearing anything red, white, and blue?
I got my American jean skirt on, a white V-neck, and the American flag on the wall here in the traffic central.
Kim Gordon, report in the WGN Radio newsroom. How patriotic are you today?
I have on a camo shirt. Does that count?
Yes, totally. It does. USA.
America.
Hey, I haven't tried that. I almost bought the four-pack of America Surly beer yesterday. I was at the Target, and it's funny, when I shop with my wife for groceries, she's getting things like, you know, juice and soup and eggs and butter, and I'm shopping for beer and Jolly Ranchers. I'm buying all the fun stuff.
You're like the kid you never take to the grocery store.
Totally that. I'm always hungry, and I'm always thirsty for beer. And there was Murica beer by Surly. I love the Furious. I love a lot of the Surly brands. I didn't try it. I don't know if any of you guys can report to me
back
home.
That sounds so un-American.
That I haven't tried Surly America?
Yeah, I mean, you were considering buying it, and then you just passed it on by.
But then, instead, I bought the number one selling beer in America when people order it at bars and restaurants. And what is that? Anybody want to take a guess?
Miller Lite.
Miller Lite is not in the top. Miller is number three.
Bud Light.
Bud Light is number one, sir.
Thank you.
That was my guess. You took it.
Corona is number two.
That was my second guess.
No, it was not.
Yeah, it was, honestly. And I don't even drink beer.
Bud Light, Corona, Miller. Anybody else want to round out the top five here?
I'm just curious about you buying beer at Target, John. That seems like a bad decision.
Why?
Because, I love Target. Great store. You go there all the time. But it doesn't seem like the place a guy like you should get your beer. You should be at a special place.
Like the corner liquor store?
How do his guests not know whether he went to a liquor store or Target or the grocery? What difference does it make?
I don't know. There's just more selections at, say, like a Binny's. A lot of options out there.
Something with a little more cachet. It's like, you got your liquor going on, man. You're here.
Yeah.
Target's more like Staples.
Is right. Costco acceptable? Because they've got a great liquor department there.
Costco's better than Target. I would grant that.
Boy, I didn't know there was a hierarchy of places we can and can't shop for our booze there, Mark. I appreciate you helping us out on this.
Yeah, there probably isn't, but, you know, I'm trying to move the needle forward here, John.
So here it is. Bud Light 1, Corona 2, Miller 3, Coors 4, Stella Artois, number 5.
Peroni?
Harpoon is number 6. Never had a Harpoon. Ballast Point Guinness, had a Guinness last night. Sam Adams, Lagunitas, hello, and then Budweiser and Michelob.